Welcome back to Old Millennials, a deep dive on shallow topics from the 90s and 2000s. I am one of your hosts, Emily Bejean.
And I am your other host, Margot Poupard.
Today is a very exciting day because we're celebrating the 35th anniversary of the American Girl dolls and books. And here to help us talk about those things is the delightful Allison from the Bloom Saloon podcast. Welcome, Allison.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely.
Thanks for coming on. We're so excited to have you, especially since I'm proclaiming you to be an American Girl dolls and books expert. Whether or not you want the title, I'm giving it to you. So here, it's heavy. Take it.
It's so heavy. And like, just wait till I get into this because I think you'll realize how sad that kind of is.
We'll get there. I'm very excited. I'm so excited because I think we'll kind of realize that we have a kinship in that sense.
Yeah, I was going to say, even like in the pre-show talk, it sounds like, judging from what Emily was saying about her relationship to the dolls and books, it's going to be a little bit on like the therapy-ish side. We're going to work through a little bit of stuff, but then I think we'll be okay.
I hope so. Always. Before we get into our topic today, wanted to let you all know about the Bloom Saloon, which is an amazing podcast. It's a Judy Bloom-centric book club podcast with Allison Michael and Jody Worthington. Allison, who's on the show with us today, is a creative strategist in advertising by day, and Jody's a graphic designer slash art director, but they'd gladly give up their day jobs to chat Judy Bloom all day long, much like how we feel about most 90s and 2000s pop culture topics. You can find them at thebloomsaloon.com and on all podcatchers and social media with some variation of Bloom Saloon. Once again, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. We were talking a little bit. Why Jody isn't here is because she's not a millennial, and our podcast almost skews like to the inspiration of like the 90s and what we grew up with, because it's very like the Judy Bloom era of the 60s and 70s and 80s. And it's just interesting. Like, it's like, oh, what era do you want to go with today? You can get a little bit of both between our podcasts.
Sure. No, I get that. And for us, like, I feel like Margot and I talk about this a lot. For us, a lot of touchstones with pop culture, we definitely relate to the Gen X stuff to an extent sometimes, because we were both obsessed with pop culture as kids. Both like were both born in the U.S., but our parents weren't. And so for us, it's like learning about all the, you know, 80s pop culture, 70s pop culture kind of helped us shape the way we thought our experiences in life were going to play out, for sure.
Totally.
Oh, and because Judy Bloom is just like a prolific writer, like there's definitely some crossover with the Gen X and millennials. Like, I think it was a Gen X babysitter that gave me, I want to say it was Tiger Eyes, some Judy Bloom book that I immediately loved, and then like read a bunch of other ones. But yeah, I feel like I've been introduced to some of the Gen X side through, you know, being called like mature for my age and like babysitters. And so you always have people that like want to give you like a mix CD from like stuff from the 80s. It is what it is.
Completely.
I have to like keep my mouth closed. I just like want to go on all day. But yes. Yes.
So quickly, I'm just going to talk like just very briefly about the American Girls and a bit of overview, just background, because I love a good just, you know, little bit of history here. We're talking about those American Girl dolls and books, which are obviously created in 1986 by a woman named Pleasant Rowland, which you may remember the name. The Pleasant Company was on the catalogs and the books that you'd get. Rowland came up with the idea after coming back from a trip to Colonial Williamsburg, where she saw potential for a younger age doll in the toy market, and one that was tied to historical events. She actually sent a postcard to her friend Valerie Tripp, who you guys might remember is the author of like almost all those American Girl books. Sure, they're actually friends IRL, but she wrote this postcard from Colonial Williamsburg to Valerie Tripp, and she brought up the idea of the series of books that centered around 9-year-old girls living in different times in American history. Each girl would have 6 books, a companion doll who had period-specific clothes and accessories, and even sometimes matching outfits for the girls who would get those dolls. And I think that's a lot to fit in a postcard, but according to Pleasant Rowland, that is what she wrote on said postcard.
Yeah, it's like back of the napkin. Like, come on, let's just like, okay, plan exactly how this is going to work to a T while I'm like churning butter.
Maybe it's a two-part postcard. Plus, you know, what else are you doing in Colonial Williamsburg if not writing like very long letters to your friends?
I mean, my dearest true. Valerie.
Did you ever do like a Colonial Williamsburg experience since you're from Virginia?
100%. And not only that, it's funny we're talking about American Girl today, and that's the story behind it, because the first American Girl book I ever bought or got was a Felicity book when I was in Colonial Williamsburg with my family on a weekend trip.
Full fucking circle.
Yes.
Wow.
That's deep.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I couldn't make that one up.
I know we talked about this before we started recording, but the two names, Pleasant Roland and Valerie Tripp, are both like made up people names. Like these people belong on Dallas or something, yes. Not making children's toys. Like, it is just so funny to me. They're like, yeah, that's their legal name.
100%.
It's mind boggling to me. Yeah. I mean, it's no wonder they go on to build this world and like name these little girls.
Right. And like Pleasant had a big background, like as an educator anyway, and like writing textbooks. And so she really kind of had an idea of what adolescent girls really were into. And it is interesting that at the time, like the only kind of doll options that you had were either like babies, like a Cabbage Patch doll, or you had a Barbie and she like was a career woman or drives a car a lot. I'm not really sure what some of the other things that Barbie does, like puts on nice gowns. Like she's very much like beautiful gowns, beautiful, great, great gowns, beautiful gowns. But 9-year-old girls who are playing with them don't really have, you know, you either pretend to be mommy, which is like, okay, I guess. But like, if you're just by yourself and you're not with your friends and you can't really engage in a game, having a doll that's your age is actually kind of fun. And I remember that they came along with the books when you got the doll, or at least the doll that I got, which was Kristen Larson, who was an immigrant, which I think she was given to me by my aunt for like a birthday or something, being like, look, she's like you, even though she was like white and so white and blonde and fair skinned. And I was like, she's not like me. And also my parents didn't come here on a ship. They came here on a plane and no one's died of like dysentery in my family. So I can't really like fully relate. But the whole like being a first gen and like not quite understanding the similarities and differences between cultures and like parents wanting to keep the culture, like, yeah, I relate deeply to that. But I already forgot my original point just because I went on like a really long windy road, but thank you for letting me take you down this path.
Yeah. I mean, just saying like this world that mm-hmm. they built.
Oh yeah. The plays. My doll came with the play. And I remember that was really like a fun part of the world building, in addition to, I guess if you had the costumes or like the outfits, you could hypothetically like act them out, which I did act them out, but not in the official sanctioned clothes. But I just thought the amount of merch that they created before Mattel came in was astonishing.
Completely agree.
Did you, Allison, by any chance have a doll?
So that's what I was gonna, what I have to confess is like, I feel like I'm an expert on American Girl doll marketing materials and on like coveting them and wishing that I had one, but I think I designed them. Like I picked the little faces so many times and I was like, this is me. I'm gonna get this like my next birthday, but it never happened for me. But I loved them. You need, I really feel for you. I think yes. I've never wanted anything more in my life.
No, I know. I'm almost emotional talking about it.
Honestly. And so now I have a child and Jen and I have been like talking about getting him an American Girl doll. And I'm like, this is like coming up in the world, like being able to take care of my children, yes. kind of a thing that I could like afford an American Girl doll for my child.
Did you guys have friends that had the doll?
Yeah, yes. I have friends, step siblings. I've seen a lot of them in person, but never had my own.
It was the most horrible thing. I was actually one of those people who read all the books too. I didn't just want the doll for the sake of having the doll.
I had the book. I had
all the books. Many a book fair, book order, what have you. I got all these books and I loved them and I wanted one so badly. And my parents just had to like break it down to me. They're like, these dolls cost a fortune. And I think that's the point where I realized Santa Claus was not real.
What doll would you have gotten if you could have picked one? I mean, if you didn't customize it, if you had to just get a doll out of the box, like what was your ideal? Because I feel like even from reading the books, I'm like, I wish I got a Samantha doll because I'm a brat. But I'm sure same. You guys, okay, had a couple
of dolls. I wanted a Samantha doll or Molly. I also liked Molly. I like what she had going on, even though in looking at a lot of the articles that we've been kind of looking through, she is the narc. Like, I definitely agree with that about Molly. But, so
yeah, I know people say this. And, like, I don't know if you guys ever watched Tinks on Instagram or TikTok. Apparently, I've regressed into, like, a Gen Zer during this pandemic. But this one girl who does these really funny TikTok videos said that, you know, Samantha, if you picked Samantha as a kid as the doll you wanted, you knew you were a baddie. Like, you knew what was up. You knew who the bad one was, like the badass one was. And I didn't. I am in the minority here. And when I wanted either Kirsten because she was blonde and I was very blonde as a child. Or Molly, because I just thought her stories were really interesting. I know everyone's like, yeah, she'd be the narc in real life. But honestly, plotline wise, she had a lot going on. There's like conflicts with siblings. And the other thing with like Samantha is I always felt like she struggled the least amount out of all the American girls. Like, she had things happen to her adjacently. I guess she was an orphan, but she had a
wealthy
parent.
Did you resent her for that?
little bit.
Totally.
But you're right. Molly did have the best storyline. I remember enjoying her books the most because you could get the entire series at a Scholastic Book Fair for like $9 or something. Yep. It was like really cheap because they were super short reads. Weren't they like 50 pages or less maybe?
Yeah, like little anecdotes, you know?
For sure.
Yeah. I definitely read all the books at some point somewhere, but I never had the doll. My stepsisters had the Bitty Baby dolls.
Oh, really?
Which were the little baby dolls that they also sold, which I don't know where those fall in the history. They definitely came later.
They're like 94-ish when I was doing my research. They came up around then, like 94, 96.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. And they were beautiful. They were just gorgeous. And multiracial. I got to say, they at least like had so many options when we were young.
I think that lends itself really nicely. You just brought something up here, which was just, you know, in terms of diversity and representation amongst American Girl dolls, while we had the ones where you could pick out one that looked like just like you, so there were different skin tones, different eye colors, different hair colors and lengths and all that. Do you feel that there is diversity or representation among American Girl, you know, books and dolls? And if so, how would you kind of categorize that portrayal?
I think looking now that there's a really great representation, like they've done a really, really good job of it. And they have, you know, even people with disabilities and people who need special stuff and different eye colors, hair color. They have everything on that front. I even like the they have like you could get like a non-binary one for sure. You know, like they definitely are, I think, flexible in terms of gender now as well. However, I don't think they were always great. I think there was some strange stereotypical stuff going on early on, right?
There was a doll that kind of like sent an alarm bell to me, Mary Grace, who's from like New Orleans. I think it was like a little stereotypical, like, oh, down on the bayou, we got Mary Grace. Like, I think there was a little bit of that. But I also, that doll kind of came in past the time that I was kind of interested in it. Mm-hmm. And I think that sometimes it is a little bit overshadowed because I do remember like the main four dolls that they launched with. And then I remember them being able to be customizable because that kind of came around the same time that they were launching those big flagship stores where you could take your doll in to get like a spa day and you could upgrade her clothes and you could get her hair done and you could also get your hair done to match your doll and they could pierce your doll's ears. And there is now, and I took my cousin to it when she was younger, the American Girl Cafe inside of the store is like also you can have like a tea time with like the dolls and stuff. And like that's it's also its own experience. And like they are like different customized dolls that have been like donated back to them for historical wow. archival purposes. And you can be like, oh, I want that one. And they have like the kid's name attached to it. It's very interesting how they've wow. managed to kind of be their own little like Disneyland in some ways too.
Oh, they're definitely like an experience mm-hmm. kind of brand. Yeah.
I definitely pulled that piece from the Racked article that I read about how they were one of the first stores to have like yeah. an experiential shopping experience, because before that it was not commonplace. No. And it's also crazy to me that she started out in catalogs, because ordinarily toys like department stores and toy companies don't stock dolls that are that big and that expensive because they don't go. So she had to essentially create her own magazine and or own catalog, excuse me, and then send that out. And I find that to be interesting because, like, in addition to her being like clothing and period accurate and books and this, she's also like doing direct mail marketing.
No, I agree with you. I think there are two things that came up for me were one, finding out just like how self-made Pleasant Roland was. Like she used her like, I think she had a little over $1 million from her textbook royalties that she put into starting the Pleasant Company. And then in terms of that fully, you know, the only channel of marketing and sales being the catalog within their first, I think, holiday season or first year as a company, I think they made like $1 million in sales just on the catalog alone in like the 80s, which is insane. I think also to speak to your point about the experiential component of all of it, I read some articles about this too when they opened the flagship one in Chicago. They even had a play. They had like a musical that you could go see while you're, you know, between your doll spa day and your tea time. You can go see a musical on like that they performed multiple times a day.
I can't even imagine what that experience must have been like. I think some of that stuff was maybe a little after my time. I might have been a little older. I wasn't going to like New York or anything. Where were the cafes? Do you know? It was New York. Was there one here?
There was one. So it's Chicago, New York. And the one that I went to is in the Grove in LA.
Ooh. Yeah.
And there's one.
So it opened way past my time, but it was still.
You took someone.
I had my cousin. So she was my like child pass. Like, ooh, I can go in here now and not look like a weirdo. Because it was around that time that I was like 18, 19, where, you know, you're like the tallest person at like a Pixar movie. You're like, I don't belong here anymore. And I sort of felt yeah. that way. But I really still wanted to go inside because I was like, you said, there's still like an emotional component when you see all those dolls lined up in the window. And you're just like, it's beautiful. Like you get it. I just want to go and look, but it would be weird that I'm just wandering around by myself, just going like, ooh.
So I hadn't seen them for a while. I hadn't thought about them for a while until a friend's kid actually brought one over.
Oh.
She had two, and she had like a backpack with a window cut out where you could see the doll's face pointing out as you like carried it.
Oh my God.
I couldn't stop. Like, Jen and I were both, I think, just like mesmerized. And so was Poe. We were all just like, these dolls. Like, they had like blue hair and all these outfits and all these shoes. And I couldn't believe that she had two of them and was like a child. Like, to me, I was like, this is decadent, you know?
She might as well be a millionaire.
Right? That's how I like still see it. And Poe is so taken that her eyes closed when she laid her head back. Poe is my child. He was just like very, very taken. And so Jen and I like immediately, like independently, my wife and I like were looking on the website like, okay, can like, could we get one? Or should we go to the store? Like, what kind of doll does Poe want? Like we were both just like, it's also marketing, right? Like we're so sensitized to like loving it already.
I mean, the window is super genius that it just put. I mean, so how do you good. Not just like notice that? And you're just like, what is that? And then you ask questions and you get like really kind of sucked in. I'm curious to know, what doll did you pick out for your son and what doll did Jen pick out?
They're both very similar. Of oh, okay. Like, like ambiguous skin color and like blue long hair, but like tomboy clothes, where like she's definitely like a cool lesbian girl for you to play with. And then we're like, oh, like we just get our child like a mommy doll. So we lately we've been like, this is all getting a little too like mother boy over here. We need to like, does he even want this? Like, so yeah. But I think it like set off a lot for me, this visit and seeing them in the flesh again.
I love this for you and your wife. I love this for your child. And I feel like I too would have the same, not, I don't want to call it an issue, but experience. If I choose to have children, this is something I've thought of as well. Like, how will I react in this situation? What will my parents, then grandparents who didn't get me the doll, think? Will they get my child this doll instead? And I will resent them and spend a lot of money on therapy talking about it, because I could see my parents doing this.
Yeah, I was going to say, I would be more worried about them buying your possible child the doll and what that would do versus you getting. I feel like your parents would be like, whatever, you got them a doll, congrats. Like, but if they did it, it's a different kind of slight.
100%. I completely agree, because Jen and I both have different, we for different reasons we never got them. Like, Jen had sisters that had them, but she never got one. And so I think there's a lot of resentment there of like, well, I never got to have that. So like, we both have this, like, we have issues, American Girl doll issues, which I'm sure there's a lot of millennial parents going through this right now. So yeah, I think if like Jen's parents got him one, or my mom did, I would die. I think I do think I'd be resentful. I don't think it would be. I think every ounce of my being would be like, why couldn't you do that for me? Like, it would open up so many other issues.
Yes. I'm so sorry, guys. I would have totally shared my doll with you. It was a gift.
That's I'm like, oh, wow. Yeah, but the catalog makers, they were so good.
Oh,
I mean,
gosh.
Because I would just study it. When that came in the mail, and there were new outfits and new stories, I just, the best.
The precursor to Adelia's, or even in Us Weekly, if you will, just flipping through.
Definitely.
Nothing better. But I feel like there's this dilemma, you know, of like, do I get my child an American Girl, or like, and how would I feel if my parents, who never got me one, got my kid one, is because the dolls still hold up. Even the books, I would happily give the book series to like my goddaughter or something, because I feel like it takes like big concepts about history and puts them in sort of like a personalized context, and obviously speaks to kids the way that they should be spoken to. And I think it really kind of helps later on, like, at least I had a better idea of what Ellis Island was because I had read the Kristen Larson books beforehand. And I don't know, I think that there were some other, you know, some Betsy Ross stuff that happened with Molly that I retained later on when we were learning about it in school. And I think that at least the books are like a great way to get introduced to them and then gauge the interest. But the dolls are like, they really are kind of one of a kind. Like I had said earlier, like before that, it's like you had Cabbage Patch dolls, but they're like soft bodied and they have like a painted face and they're very cute and they kind of have this sort of like, they're babies, but like an American Girl doll kind of felt like they used to have those Barbie heads where she was like life size and you could dress her up. It sort of felt like that, but like more like mature.
They were nice. You had to mm-hmm. be careful. Mm-hmm. That was not a doll you were just like dragging around.
Well, and I think the other thing is, I just listened to a podcast all about Mattel versus Hasbro and all about the founding of Barbie and like how the couple, it was a married couple who started Mattel and later decided they wanted to have a doll, which fun fact is actually the body and silhouette was based off of a sex doll that they saw at a shop during a trip in Europe. She had been dressed in clothes, by the way. She was being used as a mannequin. Jacked. So I should preface this, but it was very funny to find out about that. But surprise, surprise. But much like how that changed the world for dolls, because prior to that, all dolls pretty much were baby or children dolls, with the sense of a, you know, if a young girl gets this doll, she's going to use it to be, you know, play mother or whatever. Barbie brought this change of, okay, here's an adult doll for children where they can live out their fantasies of, you know, having a job or a house or whatever. Much like that, I think American Girl, like we talked about earlier, brings in this kind of new world that just holds up because, one, there's the historical context that's really interesting and teaches you about events in history. But two, there's something so special about having a doll that is your age. That's not a baby or an adult, but one that, you know, is a 9 or 10 year old like you dealing with the same kind of problems, just under the lens of a different time in history.
Yes.
So I think what
I agree wholeheartedly.
Yeah. It's just, and it's funny, like, as we talk, the more we've been talking about it today, the more the memories have come up, the more I realize, like, how much I can sort of tell you about a Barbie doll here and there, but I can tell you so, like, confidently about this, you know, story of this one character in American, you know, the story of Kirsten or Samantha or Molly, and then all the details around that, or the details of the Pleasant Company catalog and, like, how I wanted Kirsten's, like, pink pinafore dress from the barn raising ceremony. Like, did not need to look at a catalog for that. Yeah.
I love their like pajamas and tiny beds.
Yes.
I really like the things, like the lockers, like the things you could get to make it like a little room.
Completely.
Mm-hmm.
Did you guys ever get into dollhouses growing up? Yeah. I never had one of my own, but I feel like the beds and all of like the little accessories that you could build out for an American Girl was like a huge part of that. Like, would love to look at it. I think they know, sort of like Sanrio, like they know to make everything like cute and like little, and like that's what like people love.
Yes. Like functional but small, mm-hmm, was just like too much. Too much.
Oh my gosh. I like just remembering. Yeah, I had like a Playmobil dollhouse, which was cute, like great and all that. But it was just like this amazing, this concept of making everything so small sized and so adorable and packaged so well. Like, just I'm thinking about it just makes me want to, like, I feel like tomorrow, like I want to go back to grade school or something, but like, you know, pre-middle school, but like during a good time of grade school, and like have new school supplies and like just excited about, you know, getting to go to the book fair or whatever. Like, there's just, there are so many good feelings that come out of talking about this. and really
that's such a good point, because it's that sweet spot before you've like realized the world is shit. Like, you're still like an optimistic child at this point. You're still doing make-believe, but it's like mature make-believe, you know? You can like tell these stories but it is the time before like acne and braces and like all the mean kids and all the shit at school.
Yeah, it's like that time right before 7th grade. Like, I feel like I have a friend whose son is about to graduate 5th grade. I'm like, he'll still be cute next year. You have to worry about 7th grade. That's when everything goes left. Like, you're still little in 6th grade. And so you still have like a little bit of time before you're like, oh, I have to like dress slutty for Halloween and I need to get rid of all my dolls because like I'm an adult now, and all of those like weird pressures that kind of come along with it.
You're still the age of like the turtleneck under the Halloween costume, which is what I grew up with when it was cold. I like, no matter what your costume, you had like a princess outfit. You had to wear a white turtleneck under
it. Yep. Yep. At the skating rink, you're like in your turtleneck and your costume. Yeah. Because it could, at least where I was in Ohio, it could snow.
I was in Virginia as well. Like, it at that time of year, it wouldn't snow quite yet, but it was still very cold.
Yeah, that sounds sucky, you guys. I don't know what that's like at all.
So sad.
You had
so
more,
sad.
A more authentic Halloween experience because you weren't, your costume's integrity wasn't compromised by Land's End.
Yeah, it was always like, how hot is it gonna be? Was always the thing. Because that's what happens when you live in California. It's just like hot all the time. But there was a year I dressed up as a black cat, but this was like as an adult. I dressed up as a black cat to do a photo thing for work. And we didn't realize it was going to be 95 degrees that day. And it was awful. So I would have gladly taken snow at that point.
Okay, sure.
Sometimes it backfires. It's not always amazing.
What was something, so, I mean, we've just gone over so much of like what our favorite things about American Girl, you know, were in terms of the dolls and the books. What are things that, you know, looking back, I'm trying to remember if there was anything I in particular disliked other than the fact that I was coveting a doll and didn't get one.
I think at a certain point, my wanting turned to resentment, and I probably had some gripes about like, get with the program. Like, you've been selling the same shit for so long and you need to modernize American Girl. And like, the thing is they did. They like figured it all out. It is a brand that it's like actually stayed with us and like stayed with the times. I haven't been to a store recently. Is anybody? No?
No, not since the store opened in the Grove. I haven't been.
I think even more so now, like, you can get a customized doll on the spot and pick out certain things. And the different outfits are really kind of, the self-expression is a really out of control now in a good way.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with you, Allison. I think the thing that I disliked was that, you know, it was before perhaps that they had gotten bought up by Mattel. And so they were like producing more, you know, after 98. And so I had like read all the books or whatever. So I was like, hurry up. I'm all done and I can't buy another doll. So I'd like more books or like another play or like literally anything. And they sort of just had what they had. And if you blew through it, that's on you. But then I think it started to like miss us like age wise, where they started to expand and they had more customization and they had more characters and more books and different people and different outfits. And but, you know, at a certain point, it's like then it's past your time and then you gotta have a kid or know a kid and then you gotta drag them to a store so you can feel current. And it's hard. Very rarely is there something that is nostalgic that also isn't like very problematic or like holds up as well as the dolls do for some reason. Like, I don't have any negative feelings. Like, they're all like warm and fuzzies. And even having to come up with a dislike, it's like if I really had to pick one thing, I guess it's this. But it's very rare that a brand is just like through and through. Like, I guess this is what it feels like to be like a true like Disney adult. Like, I have nothing but happy, warm feelings when it comes to this brand.
I was thinking about that a lot. One of the things I was reading while I was doing a little bit of research on this was the American Girl stores, the places, I think is what they call them, the American Girl place. The whole team behind that were all women. Pleasant Roland was a woman. Like, this was a very female-centric company. I mean, first off, the narrative was around, you know, young girls growing up in these historic times. But it was also, you know, behind the scenes, a lot of women were involved in the putting together of all of these things. Like, Valerie Tripp wrote almost all those initial books for the original characters. And I think there's, not to say that women can't cloud things that were, you know, created in the past. Like, we've had that plenty of times, like J.K. Rowling and, you know, whoever else, she who must not be named. But I think that it what's been kind of pleasant here, for lack of a better term, is to see that, yeah, over time, this aged fairly well. And maybe there have been some wording changes that I don't know, because I didn't come across that. But, you know, I could very well see maybe some wording changes were made or little tweaks here and there. But ultimately, this has stood the test of time so much more so than other things from our childhood.
I totally agree.
I was thinking while you were saying that, Margot, you know, they were acquired by Mattel. So backstory for everyone listening, the company was acquired by Mattel in 1998 for $700 million. And as of today, Pleasant Roland is worth, I believe, over $300 million. It turns out she and her husband are very generous benefactors, though. They're philanthropists. They recently donated like $10 million to the University of Wisconsin's hospital in Madison for like a transplant wing. And they've donated $100 million for a performing arts center in Madison. Like, they're ultimately, she is a good person through and through. But it is interesting, you know, Mattel acquiring American Girl, there are little changes that have happened. And I got a little in deep on some of those doll collector websites of what people kind of talked about. They have like terminology for the dolls pre-Mattel acquisition and afterwards. And like, they actually, they're saying that like there are slight differences, like the post-Mattel acquisition dolls are like have rosier cheeks and thinner bodies and less like quote unquote baby fat, which it was very weird, but I like went down this rabbit hole and I'm like, I can't stop. I'm going to read a little more about this. But it was very interesting to see, you know, that may be the one kind of negative thing is that maybe the quality of the dolls themselves has gone down over the years. But I think is there, you know, looking now, and again, all this happened as we were growing up. So by the time Mattel had probably finished the acquisition and changes have been made, we were already kind of phased out of the age group. But it is kind of interesting thinking about it, that the company that created Barbie ultimately is the company that bought American Girl.
They had to eat it up, you know, it was time. They were, you know, eating into all their earnings. People wanted those dolls more than they wanted Barbies. They had to bring them in.
And not for nothing, I'm sure Mattel tried to create a competitor and it just didn't take off. I mean, that's $700 million in $98 is quite a bit in current times, I'm sure. And so I'm sure it just drove the price up the longer she sat on it and the more successful it became. But I think that she ultimately took the deal because she really wanted to have these stores, maybe not necessarily like nationally, but she wanted to have a few stores. And that takes a lot of money to open these stores. And I'm sure it would have been successful, but you know, I don't know anything about this, so I'm just going to say words, you know, overhead and like the cost of running them. And you need kind of like a machine sort of
like Mattel.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. I would say I totally agree. And it makes sense that Mattel has kind of evolved with American Girl as well. Like the stuff they're doing with Barbie now is really interesting. And they're just like, not to be like, ooh, big company. They're great. They're not, I'm sure they're not in a lot of ways, factories and all that shit. But what they're doing in terms of brand for Barbie is pretty interesting. Like they're very inclusive and they've gotten with the times and they put out good content. There's like so much Barbie TV out there. It's wild, but it's like good. Huh. Like not of the worst of the worst kid shit.
Yeah, there's some pretty bad stuff like on Netflix and YouTube that I'm like, this is unbearable. There's got to be something that's marginally better. But I was only going to comment on back to Emily's point about the collector's editions. I find that world to be super fascinating because they do need to find these like bizarre imperfections or perceived or real, because you never really quite know, because you're like, I don't see the difference. So right. I would be interested to see the two different dolls like side by side to make my own assessment.
Yes. I was going to – did you look, Emily? Like, were you looking at photos? Like, do people have this evidence on the internet?
So I tried to – in this particular post that I'd found this in, I think it was an American Girl wiki, that the photos – the image resolution wasn't that great or something like that. So I couldn't tell. I could see a little bit of difference, but I think it's probably one of those things you need, like, a tape measure for, to be like, it's a 2-centimeter, you know, distance between the eyes versus the 3 centimeters before type of thing. but really,
it's like imperceptible, like probably nothing,
probably really. Not much. I mean, I feel like
I kind of love that it's a conspiracy.
Yes.
The best kind of conspiracy. This is so harmless. I'll do this all day.
Totally. And on the subject though of the dolls and the whole kind of getting the history through the lens of a 9-year-old girl, was this kind of a gateway book series for any of you to anything else in particular, like be it a genre or another series?
Yes, it was a gateway to historical fiction. Remember those other
Dear America
book series? Yes, the Dear America book series. Sorry. That's what it was.
Did you hear the noise?
It totally just channeled that. Yeah.
I'm so happy right now.
But so yes.
Yes.
The same, yeah?
Yeah. How about you, Margo?
Oh, I don't think so. I think it just really got me into like following an entire series to the end and finding that to be satisfying. And I think I probably just picked a different topic and was like, I'll just do this. I'm not big on like historical fiction that much. I mean, I think the last historical fiction book I read was the one that takes place at the World's Fair about the serial killer.
Devil in White City.
Thank you. Yeah. I love that book. But I'm not big on historical fiction, and I don't remember Dear America at all. I feel like I read like Captain Underpants after or something and did that whole series or something to that effect. Or maybe I moved on to Animorphs. I really don't remember.
It's so good. I loved Dear America. And then there were a couple of other spinoffs from that too. So there's like My Name is America, where the diary writers were men or boys. And then the other spinoff was The Royal Diaries, which was the diaries of young rulers. So like young Marie Antoinette, young Cleopatra, young Queen Elizabeth
I love that shit.
Me love too. Love it. Obsessed.
I still like... When I listen to like cheesy sleep stories at night, that's like the kind of stuff I'm like, tell me about going down the Nile. Like that's what I want. I'm completely with you. It was like, you know what? History can be fun.
Yeah.
It was like that gateway.
Completely. Well, it's just like interesting to me because I wonder, and you have a kid, so you know, like, please let us know. You know, Scholastic, when I think about, I'm thinking about the time when I worked at a company where Scholastic was a customer, and I just got so nostalgic just hearing the name because it conjured up so many great memories. Is Scholastic still this like, you know, powerhouse for children? And yes, that makes me happy to hear.
It is. They still send the pamphlet home like at post school, and we have like the code to use, and you can like send one to the school, send one to us. Pose, you know, issue doesn't have all the like juicy paperbacks like that you used to get once you got a little bit older. His is all geared towards like toddlers and kindergartners, but it is very nostalgic, and he gets like, you get like these great paperback versions of things that are just somehow also really old school and fun. Yeah, they're alive and kicking, I think.
I went to one. My nephews, when they were in elementary school, they had an open house. And so I went to their open house that ended in a Scholastic book fair. And I went in and it looked exactly the way that I remembered. I mean, they haven't updated those graphics in fucking 15 years. Like it really felt, I just felt like I was a child again. I was just like, oh my God, I'm like, what should I buy? And I started like looking around, I'm like, you're an adult, like get it together. And then my nephew's like, can you buy me this? I'm like, great, I'll do that instead. But
it'll feel so good.
Yeah, it just was completely unchanged. And I think I got like a bookmark and felt really great about it. But yes, all of like, they had like all the kids stuff towards the front. And then like, they had like the young adult section where they just had like, they had all like the Harry Potters and all of that kind of stuff, but then they had like some more like obscure titles, and I was like helping my older nephew like pick out a Goosebumps book or whatever, and I was just like, this all feels right, and I'm just so glad Scholastic is still around. But also at Scholastic book fairs, and it ties in perfectly with American Girl, did you guys ever read the American Girl magazine? Because they had them sometimes at the book fairs, and I know I had gotten like a couple of issues, but curious what your relationship was to that. Since we love the catalog so much too.
I think maybe I got my hands on the magazine a couple times and I loved it. I loved these glimpses into like the homes of people with these dolls. Like the more lifestyle kind of it all was very interesting to me.
You want to see how the other half with dolls live, right?
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, that's what teen magazines and like kid magazines were for. We're like, whoa, these people are like living like this. Whoa, like that's amazing. People travel to different countries.
This doll is in Brazil.
They also had books too that were somewhat related to the magazine that were all about, you know, you as a girl or that kind of thing. There was one that's like very popular called The Care and Keeping of You, I think was what it was called. And it was all about your body and was very ahead of its time because it would like show you diagrams of your body and like how it's changing and like hygiene and like here are things you should know about yourself. And like, this was very, very ahead of its time compared to so many other things being offered to girls our age in the market at the time. But they had these really great books that were kind of tied to the magazine that elaborated on some of the articles that they had. which I thought was great. I mean, I feel like we've covered so many things here. We talked about nostalgia. We've talked about, you know, if there was anything that would be, we'd like to be different about American Girl. For you though, I mean, as an adult, we've talked about, you know, you would gift your son one of the dolls for sure. And then I kind of, on that subject of like, you know, American Girl today, the dolls today, what would your doll be? Actually, if there was one that you wanted to create that like tied to a certain time in history that you don't think has been made, what would it be?
Ooh, that's such a good question. They have the like Summer of Love, like hippie one, which I would have loved, but she, you know, she already exists. So I would say like New York in the 70s doll, like a child at the Chelsea Hotel. Like she needs a little edge, you know? Like a beat poets like kid or something.
I actually read you know, Eloise the Plaza, the book. I once read like a bio on Gabby Hoffman. I think it was on her Wikipedia page, because she is the child of like Andy Warhol adjacent people. And there was like a parody book that someone wrote about her because she had grown up at the Chelsea Hotel, and it was called Gabby at the Chelsea or something like that. I don't know if it like was ever published, but it was like something they made amongst them, like the circle of Andy Warhol or something like that.
That's it. That's the American Girl dolls, Gabby at the Chelsea.
How about you, Margo?
To adopt some new titles.
Yes.
I was actually going to say something along the lines of what Allison said about like, I want like a Margot Tannenbaum-esque doll, like Margot Tannenbaum as a child American Girl doll. But if not, then maybe, I don't know, obviously I'm going to have to do a doll that's like perhaps in the turn of the century in France, so like a Moulin Rouge doll kind of situation. Like, they don't have to like live at the Moulin Rouge, but like, you know, it's turn of the century. You know, I'm very kind of I'm picking up on Allison's like beat poet vibes that she had like laid down earlier. I kind of feel like that's very funny. You know, optional pack of cigarettes, because it is France and it is the turn of the century.
I don't know, they've got to be authentic to the reality.
This is the only experience I know. Emily, what about you?
So I started thinking as we were talking about this, realizing that we, you know, grew up some 30 years ago or something, that we are almost primed in like the next 10 years to get an American Girl doll that grew up in like the 90s.
Stop. Stop this right now.
There is one.
What? No.
Oh, really? Who?
Is she in Seattle? Hey,
so there's Courtney is in the 80s. There's like a new one. Maybe it's not out on the website, or that there's like a more kind of hip one.
I am terrified.
Oh my gosh. It's like
I'm looking at the list right now.
Yeah. Is Courtney the latest one? She's definitely 80s.
Wow. Is it like
so they have,
is it tied to the Challenger disaster by any chance?
No.
Okay, well, so there's Kira.
Oh, Courtney is 86. Courtney Deborah Moore.
Oh.
She's part of the Be Forever line. But I don't see anybody in the 90s. There's Susan Yang, but she's retired. There's
Kira,
Tennyson.
I think.
Kira?
She's a new Australia one.
Oh.
She's the girl of the year. Maybe that's it. They have this like girl of the
girl
year.
Girl of the year, yeah, is different.
It's different? Okay.
Yeah, I think that's a different situation. I think those are
current.
Yeah, so starting in 2001, American Girl began producing Girl of the Year doll, that was exclusive to that year. Lindsay was on sale, so they were just yearly exclusive dolls.
Okay, but it's not set in a distant time. Okay, thank
you. No, they're just of the moment. So
I saw it and just died.
Like, apparently their first doll, Lindsay, was on sale from 2000 to mid-2002, but it wasn't produced because of lack of sales. And they came back in 2003 and they started making them exclusively to their year of origin. And so Girl of the Year is only available till December 31st of that year, or while supplies lasts.
So what was Lindsay set in? Oh, she was set in 2002. Okay.
Mm-hmm. And for whatever reason, it just didn't quite take off at the time.
I wonder if she's like highly sought after.
Oh, like a rare character. Also
now every character has an additional mobile app to go with it.
What?
But they stopped making Girl of the Year dolls in 2016 with Lea Clark, who had a movie. And so it seemed like that was an indication of them abandoning a modern American Girl film adaptations. Because I remember seeing an American Girl film on Netflix that I didn't watch. And I'm like, that's not for me. And also, it's so bright. Like, why is it so brightly lit? Just, I don't know. There's something about those kinds of movies where you're like, no, thanks. But it seems like after 2016, they stopped doing that kind of stuff. But their most modern doll comes from 1986, and her name is Courtney. Okay.
Wow.
And she is active, trying to see if there's anything interesting that we should know about her. Nope. But they also added Bitty Babies, which I think goes with that baby line of dolls that you were talking about earlier.
Yeah. They're the Bitty Baby collection. Cool. They really were. Like, that was the other thing about American Girl. It's just, I can't stress this enough, like the level of craftsmanship, because these were not, it wasn't like these, they didn't half-ass these. They were such beautiful costumes and like beautiful dolls and just everything, the detail, like they were outrageously expensive, but the detail that they put into this, at the time in comparison to like what other toys were being marketed to us as kids in the 90s, which is like so different in comparison of just feeling like this was, you know, could have been a doll you had gotten, you know, 50 years prior or something like that.
Wait, so Emily, what would your doll be? We got sidetracked.
Oh my gosh.
You were going to say maybe 90s, but.
Yeah, well, I did think that would be kind of funny, is to have one like grow up in Seattle in the early 90s.
That would be fun.
She could cry over Kurt.
Yeah.
Could be very, yeah.
That's the Changes For book. That's like the sixth book in the series for all the dolls, right? It's, yeah, Changes For Sally. But she, yeah, her costume is like a plaid shirt with some ripped jeans and some Doc Martens, like little doll-sized Doc Martens.
Those would be adorable.
I'm writing this book tonight,
like,
you guys.
Very easily, very easily dread her hair.
Yeah.
Comes with optional dreading material.
Oh, God. She has
like a hair wrap.
Homemade granola set that you can, like, much like they make ice cream, I think, in one of the books. You make homemade granola.
Oh, yeah. You do. Yeah, because I drove my mom crazy. I made her help me make ice cream. It tasted like shit. It was so bad. She was like, this is why you don't do stuff out of books. And I never learned. I mean, I'll still do stuff out of a book. Be like, I hope it turns out the same way.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I made like a TikTok thing yesterday, and I made it. And the whole time I was making it, I was like, this is a trick. Like, this is disgusting. Why am I doing this? Like, what has compelled me?
Was it the feta thing?
Yeah. You see it? No, I've done that one. It was the watermelon rinds.
Oh.
Have you seen that one?
No.
You boil them for 20 minutes, and then you put all these spices on them, and you can eat them.
Oh.
Wow.
How did it turn out?
It was disgusting.
Not great? It was disgusting. Okay, cool.
I'm sure it was me. But then I was also like, there was a part of me that was like, is this a trick, like, to get dumb people to do things, like gullible people on the internet? Or like, yeah, you can eat the watermelon. Ryan, sure. Go for it.
My new favorite TikTok video style, speaking of like all of the nostalgia we've talked about today, are these girls who are doing hauls of like going thrifting, and they talk about the haul that they got. And they're like, this one girl will pull up her jeans and will say, you know, I got these pair of cut off Jordache jeans. And then a woman cuts in and is like, excuse me, Jordache? Jordache? Those baby Gen Zers.
They figured something out.
Yes, they truly did. I mean, they're doing lots of great things, but then moments like that happen, and that gets scary for me. But I'm sure I too once did the same thing, in which one of my Gen X cousins gave me a dirty look and said, you mean this? You youth?
Yep.
So before we sign off for today, are there any parting thoughts about the American Girl dolls or books?
The girl boss of it all. I love it. It's great. Keep it up. I mean, it's fine. Honestly, if more companies were like that, be great.
I would have to agree. This is probably the most happy nostalgia episode I think we've ever done, Emily, where it's just been like pure, like warm, fuzzy, hard eyes the whole time. And yeah, I wish more brands would trick me into capitalism this way, you know? And I can't wait to spend too much money on one of these dolls for my friend's child in the near future so that I can play with it.
Yep.
100%. Allison, do you have anything that you would like to plug? Any upcoming projects? Anything cool that you're working on?
The coolest stuff that I'm working on is with the Bloom Saloon. We just finished starring Sally J. Friedman as herself. It was a long season of that. And we're moving on to Beverly Cleary now.
Oh, how fun.
Sometimes we do Judy adjacent. So, we just got to tune in. And there's tons to catch up on.
I love Ramona, so I cannot wait to listen. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Allison. And thank you to all of you listening for continuing to listen to our podcasts. And if you like what you've heard, you can check out our other episodes on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you like to listen. Allison, once again, for you, The Bloom Saloon, where can people listen to your wonderful podcasts?
They can find it on Apple Podcasts and on Spotify and all the places. And it's just The Bloom Saloon, BLUME, Saloon like a bar, SALOON. And if you put that into the search box, most places you can find us.
That gave me major Zoom vibes of like, email or Zmail. If you guys ever watch Zoom, no, the PBS show. I just remember their address perfectly.
Yes. It was that. Yeah. Yeah. I hear you. We've done it many times. We've been doing the podcast for like 4 years, which is bananas. So you just are like, wait, where do you go into autopilot of where it is.
I do the same thing with, and on that note, the best way you can stay up to date on old millennial episodes is to subscribe to our podcast. And while you're hitting that subscribe button, please maybe leave us a rating and review us. Additionally, we are on social media. You can check us out on Instagram and Twitter at The Old Millennials Pod. And finally, you can find us individually on Twitter. I am at Emily A. Beijin.
And I'm at Marg She Wrote. Thanks again for joining us, Allison. This was a really fun time. And until next time, we say bye-bye.
Bye.